You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles. The show is Melting Pot. My name is Michael Barnes, and it is my utmost pleasure to welcome back into our studios Rodrigo Amoranci. How are you doing, Rodrigo?
Hi, very good. Happy to be here. Back here.
Yeah. It's, last year you came in little while after your album Cavallo had come out, and it was pretty much at the beginning of touring here in the States connected to that record. And it was just an exceptional performance, one of my favorites of the year. Actually, that the performance of The Ribbon was my single favorite thing I heard all last year. It's the best thing that I heard. And, you know, having the chance to bring you back in, you know, pretty much any time I have the chance to bring you back in, I'm probably going to jump on that chance. So it's nice for you to be able to come back to us. And you've brought your guitar once again.
Yeah.
So you're going to play some songs for us.
Oh, yeah.
Now, why don't we just throw it over to you right now? This is Rodrigo Amoranci, and you're hearing him live on KPFK and Melting Pot.
Thank you.
You just heard music from Rodrigo Amaranchi here in our studios performing live a song from his solo record, Cavallo. The name of the song is Tarde. And this record, Cavallo, has now been with us for a little while. You've been touring with this record for a little while. And one of the things I was interested to talk with you about is just that experience of touring behind this record, because it was a record that was kind of a bit long in the making in terms of solo debut.
Yeah.
And I wonder what that experience has been like bringing this music to people here in the States and all over the world.
It's been great. I mean, like you said, it came out. Now it's been a while since it came out, but it feels like it's a big relief to play it, because it feels like I'm finally delivering it, you know? Mm. Like, you know, you take these songs away from me now, you know, so I can move on. I mean, it sounds negative, but it's a very positive thing, you know?
Yeah.
To feel like I've, you know, it was worth all the work into putting it together. And I'm still touring it. I mean, I thought that at this point, because I'm already writing a new one,
Fantastic.
New record. And I thought I wasn't going to be touring at this point, but I am still am with this record. So it's a good thing, I guess, that there are still, you know, people asking for shows. And
yeah, it's very good for us to be able to see you.
It's,
you know,
very good for me.
Performing well.
It gives me a job.
It's good for everybody. There is a there's a difference in kind of hearing this record as a listener listening to the recorded album, and kind of hearing these songs performed live. In both instances, I'm not sure if some of the members who are in your live band are also people who played on the record.
The record, I had a few friends come in and play this and that, but I played most everything.
Okay.
I had my friend Fabrizio Moretti, who I had another band with called Little Joy, come and play two of the drums. I had friends do all the choirs. There's quite a few choirs there, and so there are other friends there. And then one other friend played a djembe in a song, but that's pretty much it. took my chance and played most of it. You know, I've been in other bands, and this was the first time I made a record by myself. So I thought I had to get it out of my head in a way to actually sit down and try to arrange everything and play every instrument, think of every part like that. You know, I am a big fan of groups arranging together. That's how I've done, you know, most of the time with the other bands, but. And so I wanted to try to do that with this record, and it was a lot of fun, and I learned a lot, but my band, these are great friends of mine that have been playing with me for a while, even before this record. You know, the bass player Todd Dalhoff and the guitar player Matt Borg were the bass and guitar player in Little Joy when we toured, and the drummer for this tour, Greg Rogov, is the drummer that is Devendra Benhart's drummer, with whom I played a bunch. Yeah. He's the one responsible for bringing me into this strange land called the United States. I enjoy it very much now.
Yeah, I suspected that there were, if nothing more, kind of strong connections between you and the other artists, just because it does. When you're on stage and when you're performing these songs, not just by yourself, but with other people behind you, that full sound, like there really is very clear kind of joy to performing. That is something that I would think comes from being kind of on a shared stage with people who know you and know you well and who are your friends, and making music with your friends.
Yeah, I feel lucky that I've... That's what I know of touring is, you know, going out with good friends and people who are into the music really, you know, deeply, not just a job or anything like that. But playing the record live is, there's something that I find that's a complete different experience for me with the same music, which is what I've kind of, you know, I made this record... And I kept it empty. That was the whole idea of the record. I try to exercise further this taking out things, you know. I've been writing lyrics like that, like avoiding adjectives and trying to leave space for it to be completed. And I'm aware these are just songs and most people don't give up that thing to lyrics most of the time. But nonetheless, I don't write like that. You know, I try to, you know, I've been exercising that, leaving space and trying to tell some sort of story that is not mine, mm-hmm. but the one who's listening to it. But anyway, not to get that too much deeper into it, but it, sonically, it reflects. So what I did is I pulled out a bunch of stuff from the arrangements. And so what I wanted with it was to bet on silence. Instead of shouting, I wanted to invite, to leave space. Instead of pushing, I wanted to I guess the good words are, instead of invade, I wanted to invite. Mm-hmm. So, and in my head, that's a punk thing to do, you know? Mm-hmm. A good thing to do,
yeah.
An edgy thing to do. It's funny to say that because it turns out it's a bunch of little waltzes, you know, yeah. but it is. So in that sense, playing live, to go back to your question, feels like that. Feels very dangerous, you know, because I have to conquer silence in a room. And, you know, dynamics are very, we vary dynamics a lot. We play quietly a lot of times, and that's a wonderful thing to be on, to walk on that line, on that blade. I feel like it's very interesting, you know, traveling in America and playing cities I haven't been before. Some, it's interesting to see people getting into it, hopefully.
What is this experience like with you, in many instances, in a literal sense, center stage, as opposed to, you know, you've worked with a lot of other bands and kind of collaborated with other artists, and this music is music that's really fully your own and you know, carrying your name, and you are, you know, right there in the middle of the stage. What's that experience been like with this tour or touring with this record?
It's great. I'm having a lot of fun. And when I started writing the record, it was interesting to think that, you know, now my name is somehow a thing, like you can buy, you know, a product, a stamp or something. And I wasn't so, I didn't like that idea so much, but, you know, coming to terms with it since I'm doing it by myself. So it is very empowering in the end, you know, and freeing, because writing a record, a solo record, whatever, you know, alone after having done that with other people, is inevitably an exercise of identity, of either trying to define it or trying to doubt it. And I think both work together, you know. And it was very interesting to develop that by myself, making the record. Now I go out and I show it, you know, and I go out and like, oh, this is me. Or, you know, even though in my head, it's such a transitory, am I saying this word right? Transitory.
I believe so.
It's such a transitory thing, identity, that, you know, that fragile thing, especially when connected to a piece, like a record or something. Yeah. And so I'm aware of that, but in my head, it goes, I don't know, it's an interesting thing. It's very teaching to me. It's very freeing, because I feel like I could actually be anything. I could change anytime I want, and I'm playing it makes me believe less on the solidity of identity, you know. Mm-hmm. So I deliver that. I have them think one thing, and
it's again when you came in last year and just performed solo guitar. There are very few songs on the record where it's just your voice and just guitar. It's a very well-produced record and well-balanced and has a variety of different feels and sounds to a lot of the songs. But when the kind of changes that happen through performance, like there's a certain kind of feel, especially like a song like The Ribbon, which again, you know, I can't tell you how many times I listened to both the studio version and the version that you recorded here. And in some cases, just on repeat. And they're really starkly different versions, you know.
Yeah.
The one you play for us, similar to what you guys have already heard today in this interview, just voice and guitar. The version on the album has a almost kind of ghostly feel to it in the production, which kind of fits some of the themes. And I was just thinking about how in performance it seems like while the lyrical content may not change, the sound changes in ways that may even change some of how you feel or you think about the songs themselves. Is that something that happens through these different performances?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, I've done quite some touring with this record now, but I've learned how to sing these songs while touring, you know. Mm-hmm. Sure, I played a bunch before I recorded by myself, but it's a different thing when you have to deliver it. And that does change things. The Ribbon is a song that I actually played even when I toured with the band, because I've done solo tours with this record too, which was really fun. Mm-hmm. But even with the band, for a while I did it by myself, that song in particular, just because I felt like I wanted to deliver the lyrics and with that bed of, you know, in a live environment at the time, I couldn't figure out how to protect the lyrics from being swallowed by everything else. But now I have figured that out. If you come to my show, you will hear it. but yeah, there's a lot of, it's fun that how things change a little bit, you know. Some songs get slower, some get faster, or, you know, and the adapting to the band playing it rather than on the studio where you can have as many elements as you want. Mm.
You talked about with these songs, you know, wanting to kind of create some space, allow the listener in some ways to be able to identify with the songs in ways that may be unique to them, in addition to just whatever might have been on your mind with the actual songs and kind of what you were trying to get across. But these songs, there is that space that's left, but at the same time, so many of these songs are really filled with distinct images. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that, because it almost seems like paradoxical in a way. The ability to leave space while also filling that space with, you know, in some cases, very vibrant imagery.
There are different songs have different kind of colors. And some are more imagetic. Do you have that word?
You just said it, so it's a word.
Okay.
That's my philosophy on it.
Then others. I apologize for my lack of vocabulary here. I'm working hard on it. And I just learned how to speak English last week, so I'm pretty good now. So, but some songs are more imagetic, if that word exists, than
others.
We're
creating it right now.
If it doesn't,
I'm going to start using it in my classes as well. So,
yeah, I want to sound intelligent here in front of Michael. I don't want to say full of images. That's just too street. I got to say imagetic. But anyway, some are more like that. Like The Ribbon is a song where I try to write it in a way where thinking about cinema as if it was, because I'd say most of my inspiration from film or the way, because I like thinking about film, like how they're made and what mm-hmm. the curve of storytelling anyway, but so that song has scenes, there are cuts, you know, and so I'm not giving much, isn't a thread, it's just images, one image after the other. And I feel like for that to have a place, I'd have to empty out the rest. Otherwise, you know, you have a bunch of instruments, because the instruments are are meaningful too. And so that song in particular, maybe that's why I like to play it by myself. But yeah, I like to leave space for those images. If I'm not mistaken, there's no adjectives there. It's just description of, you know, nouns and verbs,
yeah.
Things that happen and but I might have let one slip.
With a song like that, with this kind of imagetic quality connected to it. When, where does the inspiration for a song like that come from? A particular image or a particular phrase, especially just thinking of kind of the process connected to the ribbon and, and its kind of companion song, I'm Ready, you know, where you're telling two related stories with I'm Ready, which we talked about quite a bit the last time. I'm Ready, kind of the story of the mother who's lost her son during war, and the ribbon, kind of the song connected to that son after he's already died, kind of reflecting on his life. Yeah. It would seem like those songs would have maybe the same inspiration, but I was just interested in kind of, because the images are so vibrant, you kind of talked about this kind of cinematic quality to some of the things that you create. If the inspiration kind of was a particular moment, an image, or did like words just kind of appear and kind of go with it?
I'm trying to go back to remember. I wrote the ribbon first. It was actually one of the first songs I wrote in English that I thought was good enough. And I'm Ready was written after. It had different lyrics, too. It was about something else. And then at one point, I thought it would be interesting to somehow complete that story. I mean, try to do that. Again, a little bit like a film where I have one song. They're the same. They're the same story, but told by different characters.
Yeah,
I mean, it doesn't feel, you know. And again, it's a subtle thing. I mean, I don't. People don't have to know that, you know. But if they're interested, it might open some other meaning to them. But the ribbon was, I think, the melody actually that I wrote led me to write about that that boy or. I mean, I say boy, but because, you know, young men that go to war are really boys. And it, yeah, it's a voice that someone that had died, like recollecting what happened, what led him to be where he was at that time. And I don't know, what can I say?
With those songs and you know, it's kind of... almost an extension of our conversation the last time. Those songs, there's a strong kind of anti-war message with them that at the same time is a very subtle message. But it's one that's very focused on kind of the pain of loss connected to war. And it's one that, even though, again, with the music there and the lyrics, there is this space that's opened up for a variety of different interpretations. It's hard to kind of get away from that feeling. And these kinds of things have been on my mind a bit just because of some of the other work that I do and just kind of the difference between, you know, like some statements that are American Sniper is the thing that's particularly on my mind. But like some statements that are intended perhaps to be anti-war but can be viewed in a variety of different ways, and especially with that film, be seen as a really kind of pro-war film. It's very hard to take these songs, these two songs in particular, even though there is that space open for interpretation, it's hard to kind of divorce them from that reality of pain and loss. I was wondering if you could just maybe talk a little bit about that.
Well, I wanted to, you know, like you, it's something that it was on my mind, you know, like we talked about, you know, driving down Sunset Boulevard and looking at the billboards and thinking like, you know, trying to do the exercise where I remove myself from knowing that is normal, that entertainment, what we learn to see as entertainment is actually a message that's being sent, you know? Yeah. And in our day and age where, I mean, now luckily it's just starting to go down, but for a while being politically correct was out of fashion and being campy is cool. And trying to, you know, have a serious conversation or trying to, you know, share a thought to see where it will go about a serious matter is boring.
Yeah.
And so, but, you know, that my world is not like that. I mean, my world, you know, what I'm interested in is not like that. So I, you know, I kept thinking humbly, very humbly, going back to the great political songs that we've had in history, especially in America, and thinking like, how if I had to write something that touches that concern, you know, that how would I write it? Because I can't write like people have done before, you know, with all the different generations. Mm-hmm. I can't say give peace a chance anymore. But you know what I'm saying? I can't, yeah. You know, and I can say, you know, oh, politicians are all corrupt. Politicians, you know, you can't. Like we did in the 90s, and then you go back, and so I mean, it's something that goes in my mind, and so what would be the way to write something like that now? And so that was my take on it. It's, you know, I'm not shouting anything that's clear and like in the if there is something there that is political, it is in the story, not in a line or in a phrase. And again, I feel like it's an interesting topic, this thing about political or not political, because I feel like if you soften one's heart, you're being political. If you give someone somehow a new perspective over anything, over someone else, over themselves, then you're being political. Because all we need is perspective. Mm-hmm. Perspective is the only thing we would need not to to accept war or things that are absurd or entertainment as we see it. You know, oh, it's mm-hmm. okay. Who doesn't like a good, you know, car chase with the bullets flying around and heads blowing and a lot of blood? Who doesn't like that, right? Mm-hmm. And so we get used to these things, and but there are these messages that are there all the time. So it kind of pushed me to, you know, I'm from Brazil. And I moved to the United States slowly because of work with Little Joy first and then Devendra and all that. It's been 7 years now. And I was affected by what I was seeing in the entertainment and culture. And of course, you know, American culture is all over the world, so it's not something new. Mm-hmm. But being that close to it and seeing, and so I thought I would get my, I would to, you know, write about that because it's affecting me. It's in my mind, and I say again, it's a humble attempt. Of course, you know, I know these are just songs. I know it's just music, mm-hmm. you know. And in the end, like I said, I might, at best, just soften one's heart one day in a car. But that's, then if that happened, then I feel like I've done something that mattered to one person there. But nonetheless, you know, I'm, because I think, you know, songs are also history. Because what if you think, what is current history? Where is it being written? Mm-hmm. Is it on the newspapers, on TV, shows and newscast? I don't think so, you know. Mm-hmm. So, of course, we're all biased. I'm biased too, in a different way. Mm-hmm. But perhaps, so that's, again, that's perspective. Maybe I don't know. I'm speaking not only for myself. I'm sure this all sounds very pretentious because, again, it's not very current to want to write songs about these things. Certainly not going to be on the dance floor, but there you go. Here I am.
But, you know, you write those songs as well. And you know, on this record, there are some songs that are along those lines. So the thing that I appreciate about you is, you know, there isn't a single style of song that you're associated with or kind of tied to. And there are a variety of different colors that get evoked and feelings and emotions and images that come through your music. So much of Cavallo was connected kind of to this experience of constantly moving and kind of feeling like an exile in a variety of different ways. And now you've been here, you know, more or less primarily based in Los Angeles area for all this time.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways taking up roots here.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how that may be affecting you as an artist and especially thinking forward with new songs and new music that you might be working on.
I feel like it's a rich experience to get out of your environment. We all know that, you know, mm-hmm. when you travel, you feel like new somehow, and you don't have all the stuff around you to remind yourself of who you think you are or who you're supposed to be and all that. So for me, it's been wonderful. Mm-hmm. And it has affected me in unexpected ways. And I feel like I've, you know, for this record, for example, I've written music that is the most Brazilian flavored music I've ever written.
Hmm.
Whereas before, when I was in Brazil, I felt like it was so natural that I had to kind of look away from it and, you know, bring in other elements and influences. So while being away, while being here, I feel it's a natural thing. Like I'm cooking more Brazilian food in my house than ever.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I feel like that goes with the music too and the writing and all that. So it does affect me. But I've also met wonderful people here, and I feel like that's the richness of this place, this particular place in the United States that seems to be the west of the west, you know, the furthest west in the new world. It's still keeps the genesis of its creation, which is the look for gold or to look for a dream, impossible dream, or to run away from ghosts that were haunting elsewhere, you know, in a way to realize something that was deemed impossible elsewhere. And I feel like that genesis is still present. And you see, or at least I met so many people that are ambitious in the purest way, you know, with ideas and with doing things that are unlikely to be done, or, you know, yeah. Anyway, and so that has affected me a bunch too. You know, the land is great. I have a motorcycle, but the people, you know, it's an incredible place. There's people from all over the place, and so that is affecting me a bunch. And it's funny, I had a group of Brazilian friends come and visit me and stay over. And they said, you know, you're a little different now. I feel like you're Americanized. And I said, well, hell yeah. What am I going to be, Italianized? But, you know, but there's, you know, so many great things to take from America, you know, I'm saying take in that sense, you know, I am Americanized in the great things that I've seen. There are great here, you know, so many, and it doesn't matter. I like to say, you know, and I used to say, oh, I could be anywhere. I could have moved to some other country. I didn't have plans to come here really, but I'm glad I did. It's been great, and I can speak English now. Yeah. Look at me, you know. Listen to me.
We're very glad that you've come here as well. And could we get you to perform some more songs for us?
Yes, but of course.
Okay, we've been talking with Rodrigo Amaranchi here in our studios at KPFK. We're going to throw it over to him for some more songs.
Tail in the end, and when to look inside to find the one you've always claimed to miss. And of course you do. What difference does it make? Placebo charms of praise. I know what's on my mind. Where else to draw the line? Sono leve
That was music from Rodrigo Amaranchi, recorded here in our studios at KPFK, performing for you all once again. I said it the last time, and it still is the same way that I feel. It's very hard in some ways to articulate exactly how thankful I am for you coming in and performing for us. It's just really, it's always special. It feels always special hearing your music, and especially, it feels especially special when you're performing the music for us and being able to kind of have you all to ourselves for a few moments. And so so thank you so much again.
Thank you, Michael. I'm the one who should be thanking you. It's it still baffles me that you know, I get to come here and play at the radio station that I listen to, and you know,
yeah,
it's too bad I can't do both at the same time. Actually, that would be horrible.
Yeah, we'll work
but,
on that.
But you know, no jokes aside, it is really an honor to play here, and I'm very flattered by that. And I am a member of this station, I could say proudly.
We thank you for that, and again, thank you so much for coming in again, Rodrigo.
Thank you, Michael.
We have tickets to go and see Rodrigo Amaranchi here in Los Angeles. If you enjoyed his music, even if this is the first time you heard him, you'll definitely enjoy it even more live. He is playing here in Los Angeles on the 31st over at the Bootleg Theater. We actually have a couple pairs to give away. The number here is 818-985-5735. The number here at KPFK, once again, 818-985-5735. Tickets to go and see Rodrigo Amaranchi over at the Bootleg Theater in Los Angeles on Tuesday, March the 31st. The 21 and over show gets started a little early, though I would imagine he's probably not getting on stage until 9, but the doors open at 7. And once again, Rodrigo Amaranchi at the Bootleg Theater. If you want tickets to go and see it, call us right now, 818-985-5735. After the interview was done, we recorded this earlier in the week. When I'd gotten to the studio, Rodrigo was actually just kind of messing around on the piano. And we asked him if he would actually play an additional song and play on the piano. We have a piano, a beautiful piano here at KPFK, if you don't know. And he did, and this is the song that he recorded. So here's an additional song from the same session from Rodrigo Amaranchi, just for you, and he'll give you an introduction right now here on KPFK 90.7 FM.
This song is called Fall Asleep. If you're driving, do not follow the instructions. Stories I'm in. Bring
from being myself. Ooh.
frente à solidão do oitavo andar. Todo dia, hora triste do jantar. Só um copo, só um prato e ao lado um só talher. Tudo é um em seu pequeno mundo de mulher. Surge a esperança na vida, ela que dança e convida.
Music from Ellis Regina here on KPFK in Melting Pot, closing things out. From her 1971 record, Ella, you heard the title track. Music also in that set from Adele Torrisi, from her record Advice from Paradise, released on vinyl by Ethereal Sequence. The song was The Show Must Go On, and the show will go on for Adele next week. They're doing a release party over at Ham and Eggs Tavern, downtown L.A., on Thursday of next week, the 2nd of April. Nadelle and her band, which now features Bart Davenport. And I'll also be spending some tunes, mostly soul. But that's on the 2nd next week, record release show for Nadelle Torisi, featuring yours truly, playing some records. And we start things off with a lullaby from Rodrigo Amarachi, who was our guest today on Melting Pot. Fall Asleep, the name of the song. Once again, you can see him here in Los Angeles at the Bootleg Theater on Tuesday, the 31st. And big thanks to Rodrigo for coming in, and extra big thanks to Stan Misrahi for making it all sound so good. And big thanks for you for listening. We should be back next week. I do believe we'll be back next week. Either way, I'll see you when I see you. Folks, things up next. Y'all take care.